Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network. I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. Our last Game of Thrones Season 1 recap with Jimmy TV and Joe Doug.
Yo, what up?
Yes, son.
Yeah, I mean, boy, we've got 2 weeks now until Season 2 premieres.
13 days.
So we're really getting close.
So it's about to pop off. But let's just hop into this recap here. We're doing Episodes 7 through 10, the final, I don't know, more than a third of the season, where shit really pops off.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second, did we just say shit popping off twice already?
Yo, shit is popping off. Yeah, we said it multiple times.
All right,
let's do this. What do we got from episode 7? Jake, give me something.
You mean Jimmy TV?
Okay. Well, first off, you know, for the first two podcasts, I've at least been kind of mentioning things that have been added or not been represented in the series, and that obviously starts kind of go to hell because just they start throwing stuff in random episodes and stuff like that. It's a lot harder to follow, so I'm not going to be doing that quite as much, I don't think. But that being said, the first scene is we have the great intro with Tywin Lannister, which we never got, and he has a couple of real choice quotes that you're going to say something clever. And then to kind of smart-assing Jamie a little bit, putting him in his place. Mm-hmm. And then he's a Lannister regarding Tyrion.
Yeah, I mean, Tywin is definitely a really grumpy badass.
Yeah, so that's a great – as Tyrion describes him in episode 10, he's a ripe old cunt. That's a great scene, and obviously that scene's not in the book because there's no POV with Premier them in the first book. It's excellent. We get a good intro to Tywin and obviously his relationship with Jaime, and also that he's field dressing a stag is hilarious. You know, cutting up the sigil of the House Baratheon is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. The next notable scene, I guess, for me was definitely the really awkward, weird, bad scene with Mr. Tommy.
Littlefinger and the whores.
Yes, Littlefinger and the whores.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps yeah. A couple awesome quotes in here. When he's talking about Catelyn Stark, he randomly stops talking about her, and he tells the whores to play with her ass. And it is a delight. But, I mean, clearly one of the whores is Roz. As we know, Roz's character is going to be an actual character throughout the series, apparently.
Yep.
So, I don't know, though. But, I mean, other than that.
And does it seem like that she's, I mean, like, she's basically fulfilling her role right as in this scene? Like, basically, she's going to get with random characters in the series, and so that way we can find out what they're thinking. Like, she had a few scenes with Theon, so we got a little bit, you know, we got to know Theon a little bit more. Here she kind of has this scene with Carcetti, and so we get to know Carcetti a little bit more.
Yeah.
In episode 10, she has another scene. So.
So you think she's going to kind of appear all over the map of Westeros?
It seems like she'll just keep kind of popping up. So that way, like, whenever a character needs to explain something, he'll just hire Roz for a little Sally on the side. And then after they slap skins, he'll basically kind of espouse what he's thinking.
Yeah.
But we're thinking that she's probably going to stick with Littlefinger for a while. Which would make the most sense for season 2 if Littlefinger's going to be doing all the traveling that he does in the book. So that would make sense.
Yeah, she's basically there just so that the writers have someone that they can either She's just there so that you can either get some history on what's going on, like, or
and to throw a little muff in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Little fire crotch up in that piece. Well,
I really enjoyed the scene where Commander Mormont is telling the new inductees into the Night's Watch kind of what they're what the deal's going to be, what it's all about, and I also really like the choice by the production designers. Jon Snow is wearing his white fur kind of around his shoulders, and he's the only one in the entire shot, in the entire scene, who's got anything other than black on. So
he's looking real fancy. He's looking like a real dandy.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And kind of sticking out a little bit, he's different than everyone else. So I thought that was good. Nice little touch.
And then they knock him down a peg. there's a lot of stuff that goes on. This kind of like episode 7 really sets up how the season ends. I don't know.
Another spectacular scene. I think it was towards the end, the scene with Drogo coming in after the wine merchants tried to poison Dany, and he just comes in, just totally batshit, flexing all sorts of places. And I was kind of chuckling, thinking about Theon drinking red wine, starving himself for 3 days, trying to look hard and stern. Meanwhile, Drogo just looks, just totally blows him out of the water, looking like a total badass.
Yeah, he starts like ripping his chest apart and stuff, and just yelling at the top of his lungs.
Yeah, that was bad boy.
I had a question here. What is, if Robert wants Ned to be, basically the guy who sits on the throne until, Joffrey's older, why does he send everyone out of the room?
That's a good question.
Because, if you want it to be legitimate, you should at least have, Maester Pycelle in there. You need to send Cersei out.
Well, I guess for that part he didn't. Obviously, it would have been fine to have other people there, but then he gets a little bit more, private with him. Oh, maybe we shouldn't have tried to kill Dany. Maybe I wasn't a very good king. Make Jeffrey a bit better king than me, or whatever. So he gets a little bit more personal.
Yeah, but still, I mean, he's on his deathbed, sure, but at least Ned Stark should have been like, wait a minute, if this is going on, let me call someone in or something, because there was no way anyone was going to believe him.
That would have made everything too easy, though, wouldn't it?
Pretty much. I suppose. George R.R. Martin really pulling a fast one on us.
I'll be right back. You guys keep talking.
Okay.
Awesome. Jake, what else do you have here?
The scene with Theon, Osha, and Master Luwin was pretty good. I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. When Theon's about to,
kind of
bones.
Yeah.
Master Luwin comes in, he's like, wait a minute here.
Yeah, he's like, easy, Theon. Calm down, buddy.
We got an interesting scene. I don't remember where this happened in the book. I don't think it happened. I don't think we really knew what happened until book 3 almost, right? Where we're actually informed that Jorah is spying on.
Yeah, Danny. I can't remember when exactly that came out in the series either. Obviously it was implied a good amount, but yeah, I'm not sure if it ever actually came out that way.
I've got a note here that says Jorah acting mad shady and are informed of his spying.
So I
feel like he has a conversation with someone.
He gets
his freedom.
He gets his pardon. Yeah, he gets his pardon from one of Varys's birds or what have you.
Yeah, but we don't. I don't think that ever comes up as we actually know for sure until book 3, right?
Well, we know that. And we know in King's Landing they say that Jorah's informing, I think. We don't know how long it's been going on for. When it all finally comes out, it's definitely longer than you would have thought to believe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely in there. Also in the book, doesn't Cersei kind of try to entice Ned a little bit?
You mean sexually?
Yeah. Doesn't she try to use her womanly ways a little bit, maybe? Oh. Or kind of throws it out there, at least?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I can't remember either exactly. I feel like she might, for some reason, I kind of thought like she did.
I feel like she might have tried to be nicer to him at least. I don't know if she was like trying to bet him, but like maybe some of the hard Cersei exterior might have melted away.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know what else do we have here. I don't think there's not much.
Yeah, like on. I mean, I don't have anything else written down. Like you said, there wasn't a whole lot to it. I want to talk about Littlefinger a little bit, but we'll wait for till the 10th episode and at least let Joe come back in to weigh in on things a little bit too.
I'm down with that. All right, let's move on to episode 8 then.
Yeah, that's fine. Obviously, okay. What the I immediately lost it when I heard this. It's right off the get go when things are all going to hell,
uh-huh.
and two of the guys are packing away stuff, and one of the guys says, "If we break anything, the septa will have my eggs."
Nice.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a solid line, especially since everyone's about to get slaughtered.
right.
Mysterio's wood sword.
Okay, so this is the thing that George, I think, was kind of – that a lot of fans complained about, and I'm certainly one in the field of this people.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the book, he is supposed to – you know, he obviously he lays everyone out. He's supposed to kill some people.
Yeah.
In the book.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot cooler to see him kill. I mean, and you know, obviously in the book he's killing people with this wooden sword. Not necessarily with the wooden sword, but you know, he's snapping people's necks and punching the wooden sword through people's eyes and whatnot. And it would have been a little bit cooler to see that.
Well, I mean, not only that, but the wooden sword in general, like, how can it even sustain one blow from a normal sword?
Right. You know, I mean, he's swinging hard at people's at these people's goofy ass helmets. How is it not breaking when he's doing that, you know?
Exactly. And not only that, but, like, when he's swinging hard at the people's goofy-ass helmets, like, how is that incapacitating them? Like, they're wearing helmets for a reason, you know?
Yeah, and they were down for a while, too, yeah. I mean, they weren't, like, stirring after he knocked them down, you know? They were really putting on the show. It was acting like they were knocked out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember in the commentary George said something like how the armor that the Lannisters wore is really different in the book than it was in the scene in the show. But still, like, that wooden sword thing is almost, I mean, you could have at least do the helmets really tell us all that much about the Lannisters? Like, when I look for Lannister soldiers, I look for like the red,
maybe a lion or something like that. Like, there's really not much else you need, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, like, their chests are all red, so that's what I look at first. It's not like I'm gonna, if someone's wearing a helmet that's like a Lannister helmet, if you will, I'm not really going to be like, oh,
I'm not gonna notice that. I don't know what that's supposed to look like, so.
So I mean, they could have easily had their helmets off or something, but
definitely.
That was kind of a little disappointing.
Especially since the helmets look so goofy and terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Martin was clearly the only guy on the commentary for episode 8. Martin was saying how people were all mad about Ciro having hair. Jake, do you want to weigh in on this?
No. When I was saying before that I wanted to weigh in on this, it was more that Ciro wasn't killing people with his sword.
So you're cool with
I think fans were a little maybe upset, but I mean, honestly, I mean, his hair, I think, makes him look a little bit more bravosi, since they're supposed to be kind of flashier, and obviously with the accent and all, I think the little kind of afro poof is actually a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that throws me off a little bit about Sirio's body type is I have no problem with being kind of a small, wiry dude, but he's got some big hips.
Yeah?
Yeah, you'd think he'd be in a little bit better shape or something, you know?
I mean, maybe that's all muscle.
Perhaps.
He's always in that squatting position, ready to strike.
He is, I guess so, yeah.
He's catching so many cats around the castle.
yeah.
I've also got a note here that this is kind of like the first episode where Varys is actually a real character. Like, before, he's kind of just like this weird, just, I don't know, he's more of like a talking head. He just gives exposition or, you know, whispers something or whatever. But, like, we actually get a little bit more on his backstory and, like, what he believes in and stuff when he visits Ned in the dungeons. So I thought that was definitely a good thing.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, he's supposed to they didn't make this obvious in the series, but I mean, he's supposed to be a jailer. You know, he's supposed to be, you know, he's not just someone coming by to see Ned. You know, he's not, you know, just like a random visitor. You know, he's supposed to be one of like the workers in the dungeon who's like, you know, who's doing that.
Yeah, he's not, like,
because he's
identity.
A master of disguise and whatnot.
Yeah, he's masquerading.
Hey, there he is. So I mean, I think especially if you know that are looking for it, you realize that there's a lot more to Varys than it seems. And again, I'd like to talk about that, but we'll wait till episode 10 about him and Littlefinger.
All right. Joe, we just discussed Syrio's sword fight and his apparent demise. Do you have anything to add before we move on?
Sad to see him go. He's a total badass. I think you have to assume that he's a dead man, unfortunately, but he was awesome. Was that in episode 7 or 8?
We're at 8 now. That was the beginning of 8.
Do you have anything you wanted to add about 7?
No, nothing other than, was there a commentary?
No.
Bummer.
Yeah. There was a lot of...
if there had been a commentary, it would have been one with during the sexploitation scene. That would have been interesting.
Oh, that would have been great.
They should have had Carcetti do it.
They should have had Carcetti and Caitlin do it at the same time.
And Roz. And then Caitlin would have been like, Carcetti, I see how you told her to play with her ass when you're talking about me. What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Episode 8.
So good.
And knowing that Cersei was kind of knocking the helmets, calling them Monty Python-esque, I really got it, some chuckles out of the Lannister helmets. They look
great. Well, we were laughing about them during the Syrio scene also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they're not providing anything as far as, you know, storytelling goes.
Or
they're just atrocious.
Yeah. They're just there, so.
Kind of floppy, rubbery-looking things. Mm-hmm.
But this episode
totally preposterous, and the way that the eyes like swing in and out looks really ridiculous.
Yeah, this episode definitely had a couple of real choice banner calling reactions to Rob saying he's going to call the banners, and Maester Luwin definitely gets like this sly little smile on his face. He's
a badass here. Yeah,
he gets a chubby. He's like, what?
It's true. And then Theon has to do it one better, and he just goes...
Yeah, he goes full staff, yeah.
Yeah, he does.
speaking of the northern boys, when Caelan meets up with them at their campsite, and, you know, they have that scene where he comes in and, you know, they don't want to embrace or whatever because they don't want to make Rob look like a little girl in front of all his newfound boys and whatnot, so then they kind of clear out. As they're clearing out, I'm pretty sure I know the great John says the first half of this. He says, don't worry, lady, you know, we'll shove our swords up Tywin's. And then I believe he says donghole. I'm not sure. It's not asshole or arsehole. Like, it's not. It's something else. And I wasn't sure what it was. And it is hilarious.
You don't have a time code listed for that, do you?
No, I don't.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put the closed captioning on there. And
see what they had at us.
Speaking of the great John, that scene where he gets half his hand bitten off by the direwolf, Bran, they do a quick cutaway to Bran, and his look is just priceless. He's just like, what the fuck just happened?
The Great John's obviously crazy.
Yeah, the Great John is a big time.
Batman, you were the person who is lamenting how we weren't going to get any more Robert, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think Great John is that guy you're going to have to lean on.
I guess I hope so. Hopefully they don't. I mean, I hope he continues to be in some more scenes because I need some Great John. And his voice. The actor's voice is so ridiculous sounding.
Well, it's just really big and garrulous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big time.
He's
yeah.
good. Going back to the sending the ravens out for the bannermen, that shot was really awesome. Like when they're saying it's time to call the banners, they like do a slow push in on a window and you see kind of the shadows of the ravens flying through it, and then they go to the wide shot and all the ravens flying out.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
And on the commentary, Martin had apparently written...
You know, who was on the commentary?
It was just Martin.
George R.R. Martin.
Just Georgie Porgy?
Yeah, the author of the books. and writer of some episodes. In any case,
of this episode, he just wrote this episode, I think.
I thought he helped with one other one.
I'm sure.
I think he only writes one episode a season.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's only actually like writing for reals. Anyway, what did he have to say?
In any case, he said that he originally had like this huge like banner calling scene where he was gonna have like each minor house like receive the Raven, and then like you'd see all their colors as they like marched off and stuff. But he was unfortunately informed that that was basically going to cost the entire season's budget, so they decided to cut that out. But he seemed to lament that a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you think about it in relation to the books, it really only would have made sense maybe to do that with, like Bolton at this point, you know? Or, you know, I guess Great John, too. I mean, they're really the only two. Maybe Manderly, the White Harbor guy. But the Karstarks aren't going to be important for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other important families in the North, but none that are really essential to the story, other than really the Boltons.
All right. Jumping back a little bit, when Arya stabs the boy that's trying to kind of catch her, kind of the actual shot where she stabs him is really corny.
Oh yeah.
It's really bad. And as much as like, you know, everyone gives credence and stuff to how good the young actors on the show, that boy was terrible.
The boy was horrific.
The boy was really bad. And then the stab was like...
But just the stab was so corny. I jotted it down as being Sam Raimi corny, like something out of Army of Darkness, where like the camera kind of does a whip pan and like the knife's already sticking in him or whatever. Just looking really silly.
I mean, the edit too is just awful, because like it looks like he catches the sword in his hand.
Yeah.
And then there's like a brief split second, and then they cut to the sword being shoved in his gut. It's just...
Yeah, they did not step their game up on that one.
No, they did not at all. I had another quibble, I suppose, with attacking in this episode. When John reaches for and takes the lantern from Mormont's hands when the White Walker is attacking them, like
the wit, not the White Walker.
Right, yeah, he's a white, or whatever you pronounce that.
The white.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a White Walker. The White Walker is like... Well, I mean, no, like, well, and I would have made the same mistake, but there is like a subtle distinction between them. Yeah.
In any case,
it didn't want to call them others because they thought that it always been confusing for everybody, so they called them White Walkers in the series.
Yeah, so they really are something other than human, whereas this guy was like an undead person basically, so he's a white.
Snow, like, grabs the lantern, it does not seem that he's in that dire straits to, like, grab the hot part of the lantern and throw it off.
You're saying, like,
you think he should have taken his time and... Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like...
Well, it's a gloves first.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the way it was edited...
Go get
the
tongs from the fireplace.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The way it was edited and shot, I'm just saying, like, there just seemed to be a huge amount of space... Between him and the
that's true. There was a lot
other.
Of space,
and like they hadn't really shown the other like tried to like attack, you know,
they
like he wasn't
after.
Rushing on or anything,
right?
So
and
I don't know.
And he had it was pretty funny too, because he kind of went he grabbed it and then he just went kind of went ah and
that's what I thought Batman was gonna say, that his reaction was just really like kind of delayed, and it doesn't even look like he throws it at him so much as kind of like drops it at him, like kind of like flings it, like
kind of pushes
it out. He like
shovel
passes it out there.
It could have been a little bit more convincing, a little bit more badass. Not John's best work either.
No.
He's a real Tim Tebow out there.
yeah, totally.
Yeah,
he used to work on that form.
Drogo is so badass. Why can't he live longer so we can watch him in action more?
Because Momoa had to film Conan the Barbarian, son.
I guess so.
I mean, yeah, no, that Drogo scene was awesome.
And that was all Momoa's idea, also.
Yes, it was. He approached Martin, and he was like, look.
And Ben Affleck.
Yeah, and he was like, look, we hear how badass Drogo is. I think it's time we show the people.
Wait, is that not even in the book? The
fight? That's correct. That's not in the book. You never actually see him fight. When he's supposed to get his cut when they're sacking the city, and he just takes like a minor cut while they're sacking the city.
Gotcha.
He never has a mano a mano showdown with somebody being a badass.
That's a damn shame.
And he certainly never rips out someone's tongue, slash esophagus.
And, yeah, glad they got that in there.
Martin also said that the guy who attacks him, Mago, apparently he comes up later in the books.
Mago.
But since they killed him off here, clearly Mago's story arc was shortened.
They can have that other guy pop up.
No, the other guy got I thought they said the exact thing, and then Jorah kills him. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
but Mago's supposed to have the biggest call post this season, I guess. In the Seven Cities area.
Yeah, I wonder who's gonna pop up for him instead.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't really matter, actually.
No, it doesn't.
Anyone can pop up. Let's see, what else do we have?
Maybe it'll be Momoa. Maybe they'll just bring Momoa back and dress him up a little bit differently.
That would be awesome.
Or maybe it'll be Bran.
Drogo's long-lost twin.
Yeah.
I wanted to say this. I think Rickon is just too old. Like, I mean, I understand how they need, like, an older kid so that he can actually deliver lines when they need to, and he's not just, like, a whimpering, like, four-year-old. But he just looks too old.
He looks too close to Bran.
Yeah.
How far apart are they supposed to be? Is Arya supposed to be younger than Bran, or is Arya younger?
No, in the books, I think, what are they, like, 3, 5, and 8, maybe, or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about
right. No. I mean, I know Rickon's supposed to be 3 in the books. I think the other
Bran
two
is
might
supposed to be 8, and then Bran's 8, and Arya's 10, I think?
Yeah, 10 or 11, and then Sansa's, because I think Sansa's supposed to be, like, 13 or 14.
Yeah, right? Sansa's supposed to be 13, and then, like, Rob and Jon are supposed to be, like, 15.
Somewhere in the 15 to 18 range.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, Rickon just looks too old. And, I mean, like, I understand why they need to do that, but it's just...
They didn't need to for Rickon. I guess, as far as getting the series shot and trying to keep him the proper age looking, then maybe they needed to, but... You know what I mean? Like, they can't not kind of crank out all the seasons in the time that it takes the novels to progress.
Yeah.
Like, how much time has passed through the end of the third book? It's not that long, right?
No, I mean...
A couple months, maybe?
A year.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems to move along pretty decently. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that I thought... it's not relevant to the TV series, but in the commentary, George Martin mentioned that Osha's going to be... returning in the books at some point, where I've read, which is all the way through all the books that have been published so far, you haven't seen Osha maybe in a little while.
That's 5, right? 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was good to know, because there are some surroundings around her that you would hope you would see in the books again, but with George, you obviously never really know she's just going to kind of let him hang out there or what. So I thought that was good and interesting to hear.
Yeah, I mean, Martin said, in fact, that he was like, because of the series, he's bringing Osha back.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was real excited about, like, the actress that was playing Osha. And
he wants to see more Osha.
Yeah, he wants to see more Osha, basically.
Interesting. So he was – hold on. I was going to say, so he's, like, totally done with Rickon then, but maybe Rickon pops up some other way in the books. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Spoiler alert.
You'll just know more if you read the books about that whole situation.
I just kind of like throwing out spoiler alerts. Did George have anything else interesting to say, or are we all done with episode?
No, he would just come on and just say something.
Yeah, he'd give a lot of backstory or history that you're not getting in the show that's clearly in, like, the books. I had a couple things for episode 8. The first was the casting choices of Timmit, son of Timmit, Chella. Real choice, especially Chella.
Chella.
I love how he introduces Chella as this fair maiden or something like that.
Yeah.
That was pretty choice. And yeah, Timmit is awesome, because obviously he's just a huge monster. Which is interesting that Shaga seems to be pretty small of stature.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Timmit was enormous, and yeah, just has that great doofus looking face.
And that stool eye that Chella's just given everyone when they focus on her. So choice.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
The other thing I wanted to say was the battle map or the strategy map that the Starks are using.
Yeah.
It seems to be a little lackluster, as they only have one wolf figurine and two lion figurines lined up back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, that's, I think that's supposed to represent the one army that they have and the two armies that the Alliance have.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you're planning a battle, you might want to get a little bit more specific than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with the Bagman on that. It was looking pretty budget. Like, do they really need to have those figurines set up with the map?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. If we brought in a spy into the tent, I wouldn't rush to cover up the map. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
There's not, like, government secrets that are going to be revealed from that map.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that should definitely have taken place by now that hasn't really. So we never really see this guy Chet up on the wall. He's the guy who Sam replaces kind of as Master Aemon's helper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah.
And he does play a little bit more of a role in later books. He's kind of just a jackass up on the wall. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you never see him.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there's no real reason for you doing it. It's a good move by them to cut down on time, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of has a little part of it in book three, right? So maybe he'll come back.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to episode 9.
What you got?
Aemon's monologue was awesome.
He was particularly terrifying when he did kind of his cackle turnaround.
Yeah,
Snow was kind of realizing what was going on.
You want to talk about something that's kind of Sam Raimi-esque? That was straight out of Army of Darkness.
That was pretty sweet. Wait, so I'm still not 100% clear on how he factors into the dynasty exactly. Can someone tell me exactly whose brother he is?
He is the Mad King's uncle.
The Mad King's uncle.
Yeah. Okay.
And the line is, I think he had four brothers maybe.
Right.
Middle child or the second to last one, and he didn't want to be the king. So he passed on it and then let his younger brother, Maker, or like Mar, I'm not really sure how you pronounce it.
Maker
be king. I think Maker's nickname is Egg, and there are stories. George Morant's written a bunch of stories, little small, shorter stories about Sir Duncan and Egg.
Oh,
no.
That follow this hedge knight and this future king. Around Westeros. I haven't read them, but they seem to be pretty interesting.
Nice.
I thought Lord Walder Frey was pitch perfect.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
Well, interesting side note here. There are two Harry Potter actors, actresses in the series, at least. One of them is Osha. She plays someone in the Harry Potter movies. And then him. He plays a really choice character in the Harry Potter books. So he's pretty similar in some ways, just this kind of this old hackling kind of person.
Yeah.
who you enjoy laughing at a lot.
Excellent. He is, all of them, in fact, are incredibly ugly.
Oh, the phrase.
Yes.
I like their preposterous little headpieces they wear. They have these little skull caps. They just look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Rob consenting to the terms in the tent was excellent.
Hab just kept going, and then at one point, Theon giggles. Theon has a nice little giggle in there.
He was like, "And you'll marry one of the wives or the daughters or whatever." And he's like, "Are there any decent looking ones?" Cat's like, "There's one."
There's one.
and he just kind of goes, "Ah."
Yeah, no, that was real good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The twins as a castle or whatever you want to call it seems kind of small. At least all the inside shots we got. I mean, for like a throne room, that definitely was pretty small. I don't think it is
a castle. I think it's basically just a bridge with two giant towers on either side.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what I was thinking is what they really should have done is just build a bridge, you know, a mile north of them, and not necessarily right now, you know, since they're going to war and all, but like. Who's to stop someone from just building another bridge across?
Right,
I mean, like, that's all the phrase I have going for them is this little bridge.
Exactly. Or at least some sort of, like, ferry system, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
because it didn't look like the water was rushing too hard under the bridge there.
Right. I mean, I'm saying, like, you know, in the middle of the summertime when there's, you know, it's not the rainy season or whatever, when the water's not going to be getting out of control, someone just go up there, build a bridge, you know, a mile or two upriver, and then you're totally cutting the phrase out of whatever little thing they have going for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't someone do that? What's the problem?
It's not like anyone likes the phrase.
I know.
I mean, there are obviously just so many phrases that you can't do that. They're everywhere, dude.
Oh, man. You could probably build a bridge out of the phrase if you really wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Sure you could have.
What else do we have here? We get Shay. This is Shay's first appearance.
When you first see her, and there's a good line, Tyrion asks where Bronn got her. And, you know, Bronn is kind of fumbling around. He kind of points to Alva Tenney. He's like, sir, you know, what's his name? That ginger cunt three times down.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, didn't he have something to say about it? And he's like, yeah, he said something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bronn is terrific.
Yeah.
And towards the end, there's a scene where they're kind of playing drinking games or whatever, and that obviously is not in the book. And so that was a nice little addition.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really like that scene.
Oh, really? I thought it was cool.
Before we get into this, how do we think the casting of Shay is? Do you think she's all right?
Yeah, she's fine.
Yeah, she's good.
I don't know. For some odd reason in the books, I always imagined her to be hotter for some reason. I don't know why.
Sorry, Bagman.
There you go. I mean, they're trying to placate me here, right? I mean, what is this? I refuse to watch.
that was it. Not the end of the episode. Not the last scene. It was the casting of Shay that made Batman stop watching.
Yep. That's it. I'm done with this problem. Podcast now too. Now that I've talked about what I wanted to.
I didn't really like that. I didn't really like the Tyrion Bronn Shay scene that much, because Tyrion actually kind of comes off as a bit of a dumbass in some of the when he's like playing his guessing game and guessing people's past,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of like smug. I don't know. I thought some of Tyrion's stuff was not quite in character.
Oh yeah, but he's wasted though, right?
But then when he talks about Tysha, I thought that was a really good scene.
Yeah, no, when he's doing that,
it's good.
The Tysha part was definitely good. I would have to say that. I mean, it's good to see kind of them. Because so often this series, like, they're just kind of thrown together, and we don't get to really see, like, a relationship develop, really.
Yeah.
So I thought that scene was good for that, but I understand where you're coming from, Jake. And if they don't kind of expand, maybe, on kind of some of the things that he asked and he was wrong about later in the series, I think it would – I mean, I know they don't do it in the book, but I think they might be, like – kind of holding that back for like a later season or something.
To give us a little Shay backstory?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. So I think maybe that's why they introduced that, because they might bring it back up.
Yeah, totally. They also omitted the part of the Tysha story where Tywin actually makes Tyrion go last.
Mm-hmm.
And give her a gold coin instead of a silver coin, because Lannisters are worth more, which kind of adds into the Tywin, holy crap. What the hell's wrong with this guy?
Yeah, they took a little bit of off there.
Took a little heat off Tywin.
Yeah. But speaking of Tywin and Tyrion, in an earlier scene, when Tyrion comes in and finds out that he's going to be leading the band, he's like, well, aren't your boys going to be ready to go? And Tyrion starts breaking down how Shaga tried to cut off a dead man's cock or something like that.
Yeah. Goes into all the stuff that happened the night before in camp. That was good. Right. There's also in the scene in the last episode, when they first come on, into Tywin's little tent room area,
mm-hmm.
And Tyrion reaches for the wine jug, and Tywin moves it away. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, they do that often.
Yeah, that's funny.
Apparently, George Martin mentioned, or at one point it's mentioned that that wasn't written in the script. So I'm pretty sure Charles Dance, the guy who's Tywin, made that up.
Yeah,
nice. like did that one time, and they're like, "Oh, that's good shit right there."
Let's throw it in whenever we can.
And then
someone else can yell out in the background.
Whenever Tyrion ever reaches for wine, someone has to take it away.
And then someone yell in the background, "It's too hot, my lady."
Oh yes, I still found it jarring, even on the second watching, even though I've been like I'm three books in to the series. I still find it jarring that randomly magic just kind of pops up. Like, this is the first time that, like, before they might talk about magic or dragons or something, and, like, you know, you feel it's kind of like a legend.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I still find the fact that, like, magic just randomly pops up as actual magic still kind of jarring.
What happens in this episode?
Yeah, what?
I can't remember.
This is the whole...
Oh, the tent scene.
Yeah, this is the whole tent scene.
Are we going to the tent?
Yeah.
The Daenerys land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's certainly more magic as each book goes, I think.
Yeah, there definitely is. It just, I just feel like they didn't build it up as like a real possibility almost.
Well,
I like trying to figure that out though. I like going back and trying to figure out like how this could be real life or whatever. So what are the possible ways? Well, I would say, what it could be is that the kid was just going to be effed up, screwy looking from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
The lady, as far as like what happens to Drogo,
Mary Mazdoor.
Right. You know, like maybe she's just some like genius doctor who knows like, oh, he'll be in a coma if I put this stuff in his cut. So that's what she did or whatever. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, how about that, the whole like tent flapping up and down and like the crazy sounds and stuff coming from the tent?
I choose to believe in the magic.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, especially as the books go on, I don't think there's any way you can...
There's no reason.
And in the
out of
book,
it.
I'm not sure if this happened in episode 9 or 10. I guess it's probably episode 10. Where they really go into detail describing what the baby looked like.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then there's this, like, half snake, half flying monstrosity.
Maybe she dressed it up that way right when it came out.
Right.
Or something like that. Like, I don't know, you know?
They put it in a half snake blanket.
Covered it with feathers.
Mm. Yeah. And, it was supposed to be, like, all black, so maybe she just, like, rubbed, you know, some charcoal
oil all over it.
Yeah.
The face that Jorah makes is priceless when he's like, the baby is coming.
Yeah, she's like, the baby. He goes, hur?
Yeah, he has a great little noise. Yeah. You're just like, oh, man.
Yeah, he's not prepared.
You're like, this guy's not ready.
And I mean, clearly he can't be delivering babies, but I still think he should have given it a shot before walking into a tent that is flapping with lights.
I don't know, dude.
And crazy grows.
There's no way Jorah could ever handle the maternity ward at this point. If I were him, I think he should have just ran. I think it would have been more to his character if he had just gotten the F out of there.
He's got his part and he doesn't need anything else. He just pieces the fuck out.
Yeah, it's just bolts.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think anyone probably could have maybe done a better job than what was going to happen in that tent.
He did about the worst thing you could do in that situation.
Exactly.
Speaking of Dany, she really looks preposterous with her, like, you know, platinum hair and the dark, thick eyebrows.
Yeah, the dark, thick eyebrows always throws me off, too. It just doesn't look right. I mean, it looks like she's obviously dyeing her hair, and obviously it shouldn't look like that.
Like, what's the story with that?
Lighten those things up a little bit for us, guys.
Maybe they just didn't notice. I don't know.
I mean, that's got to be a choice, right? I mean, at the very least, they could have like thinned her eyebrows up a little bit. Right. I mean, they're so big.
Yeah, they're
so
big. Dark. They're and dark. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that too.
I don't know what to tell you.
Why would they do that? Like, what's the is the idea that she's out with the horse people? Maybe there's like a lot of dirt and it gets up in there, so maybe they just kind of went a little overboard on like making her look dirty.
I think they probably just forgot.
Yeah, I think it's just something they overlooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to come correct on that.
Well,
we'll
see when season 2 comes out.
Arya really messes up that pigeon's neck. I'm not sure if I noticed that on the first time through.
Yeah, no.
She turns a pigeon's neck 180 degrees around.
Yeah, she
makes sure
that
shit's
around.
Dead.
She can handle the pigeon.
Yeah, no, she can. And she
caught
it, too.
And then Sansa just can't stop smiling during that scene. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, she was.
I mean, like, I'd be okay with her, like, trying to flash, Ned one a smile, like, when he kind of looks over in her direction. You know, it's kind of a, you know, we're gonna get through this. We got this. You know, let's just do this. Let's get this over with, and let's get the hell out of here. Kind of smile. You know, instead she's just like straight up cheesing the entire time.
Well, maybe yeah. Sean Bean was.
Even when things starts to go downhill, she's still smiling.
I mean, I think Sean Bean must have been telling him some bawdy stories in between takes. Yeah. I mean, that's why they. I mean,
giving them suckers and sandwiches.
I mean, Cersei kind of cracks up a little bit too. Like I remember at least one point where she like had to hold back a smile. Like I see her like taking a bunch of air and like open and close her mouth. So something must have been going on between takes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Unfortunately, there was no commentary. I wanted to say Tyrion's intense speech voice is it's definitely a little Christian Bale Batman-esque.
He goes into the growl a little bit.
He goes into like a
growl. Like when he's pumping up the storm crows and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not very pump upable.
It's not very inspirational.
No.
It might not be, but then when you get Shag and banging together two axes yelling half man, that on the other hand will get your blood rising in a second.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tyrion needs to enlist Shag as his speechwriter.
Yeah, just pump up guy.
Yeah. Another guy that was not delivering very good motivational speeches was Rob after he captured the Kingslayer.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
Debbie Dowd, do not enjoy this battle win at all. Yeah, we haven't done anything yet. Thanks,
sure,
Rob.
We captured Jamie, but other people are still captured and people died.
Yeah.
No one celebrate this. And they definitely copped out on the battle, too. I don't remember if they had any battle in the books. I feel like they did, didn't they? Tyrion
wrote
out.
Yeah, they had Tyrion's battle. And, you know, Tyrion turns into a bit of a badass, which you don't see. You're going to see this next series. They're gonna actually show it.
Yeah.
And I understand that not doing that to save money or whatever, but they also kind of screwed up with the strategy a little bit, right? Like, doesn't...
Oh, yeah, they're not supposed to be in the Vanguard. They're supposed to be over by the river. And so that they intentionally fold over by the river so that they can kind of, you know, fold the other army up against it.
Yeah, Gregor's supposed to be in the van, and then not even that, but also, like Bolton's guys, like, the troops that are going against him, like, Rob's guys was supposed to be a bigger army, wasn't it, on that side? And then he takes the smaller army across the, like...
No.
I think they got it mixed up.
No. No.
Joe, I think you've got it mixed up.
Yes.
Because I was pretty sure that, like, Rob took, like, a small force, and then he was, like, basically, like, raiding different camps and stuff.
No, Roose just took, like, the cavalry, I think, is pretty much what it boiled down to. Mm-hmm. And then Rob took everyone up over to the west, I guess, or whatever. But that's something that I thought they could have added in to get maybe Roose going a little bit more.
Battlefield commander.
Spoiler alert. Roose isn't a great guy. Roose is kind of an a-hole. I won't get too much more into it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I think they could have had a scene with maybe Roose and Tywin where they're talking about some shady stuff that might come up later in the series that I thought they could have done. It would have been kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm. What else? But I mean, we've got, yeah, you already mentioned Sansa and Cersei kind of yucking it up a little bit during the beheading scene of Eddard Stark. I think my favorite look in that entire thing, though, is Joffrey when he announces that the head's coming off.
Oh, dude, he's playing to the crowd.
Real crazy shit right there.
Batman, was it in the 10th episode commentary where they were laughing about how, you know, Daenerys never gets recognized because of her hair? Like, you know, she doesn't get recognized as much in public because of her hair, but whenever people see Joffrey, they start cussing him out and calling him a little shit and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that was, like, in one of the earlier commentaries.
Yeah.
You're saying in real life the actor gets
you
shit thrown at him?
Yeah.
People really hating on Joffrey's.
Yeah, there were, like, YouTube videos of people's reaction to Ned getting his head chopped off, and they were, like, you know, going crazy.
Well, I mean, I remember when we first watched the show, and Joe and I know Joe and I talked. I don't know if Jake was talking about this.
I read the books, I knew it was going
to
happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was talking to Joe, and I was telling him that I didn't feel, I felt betrayed, especially from HBO's side, because right. They were marketing so hard that, like, Sean Bean is in this, and then all of a sudden he, like, dies in episode 9, and, you know, like, you definitely feel betrayed. And Joe was like, well, they kind of got rid of him. And rewatching the episodes, like, he's still got a really principal part in episode 8. No, 9. 8 and 9. I mean, he's not in it as much, but he's still in it enough where it's like, it's not like I guess it's good because it's not like you can read that they're trying to get rid of him. But still, it's not enough so where you think, okay, well, clearly his story has run out either, so I don't know. Does no one want to comment on that? All right, then.
Not like him being dead. I think it's sweet.
Okay.
You know what also is pretty funny is he's on that new Ashley Judd show,
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
On a TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they kill him in, like, they kill him in the cold opening
of
the TV show.
Sean Bean has
apparently,
too many...
Apparently he's in more of the series via backstory,
Sean Bean needs to hit up the pubs and actually take out battle axes and chase people around too much.
That's what he does on his TV schedule. One of the many backstory scenes that they cut out that might be important at some point was the Tower of Joy scene, which I would have enjoyed seeing. And that is after they kill Rhaegar and after they take over King's Landing. You know, this is with Robert and Ned. Yeah. Robert's doing something, or maybe Robert goes up to the Trident, but then Ned and kind of six of his cronies go to the Tower of Joy to get his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And when
it's
they
the
get
Tower of Joy,
it's just a random tower, a random hold. And cause that's where they know that Lyanna is. But then three of the Kingsguard are guarding her, which obviously raises some questions. Like, you know, why the hell are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
But it also gives you a little insight into Hal and Reed, who they've completely cut out at this point, and the entire Reed clan.
Well, I mean, the Reeds don't really play a major part until season 2 anyway, so maybe we'll still get that in season 2.
I hope so. And then one other person who should be potentially major later, who they've completely cut out to this point, and actually had a decent amount of material in the first book they all removed, was Jean Poole, Sansa's playmate kind of person from Winterfell, who comes to King's Landing with her.
They mention her a couple times, but I don't think she gets that much play time on air.
Nope.
In any case, episode 10, where Jake apparently has so much to say.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy TV has been pushing all the good stuff for episode 10.
Well, I mean, no, I guess I mean it's not really stuff having to do with episode 10, nor the season on a whole, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into that, let me just tell you this: Rickon is a terrible actor.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, his words are woodenly delivered.
And when they're in the crypt and the like.
Yeah.
And he's clearly not crazy enough either.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's supposed to be, you know, feral, you know, like, he's supposed to be going, like, just wild.
Yeah, he's supposed
wolf
to start
certainly
wild.
Is.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I mean, I think the wolf is even supposed to be more so than he is.
Yeah.
The commentary was from Benioff and Weiss, and I'm the only person who listened to it. There were two kind of funny things. One of them I'm curious as to if you picked up on. The first is something that they were just laughing about how Benioff and Weiss were about at least one of them was mentioned how they do read like message boards about the show and about the series and stuff like that. And they were laughing how like, you know, they'd be on set maybe like looking at the message boards and someone would walk in and they'd quickly, you know, X out of the message boards and then turn on the porn or something like that, you know.
Nice.
So I thought that was really funny.
Nice.
And then they were really, really tripping off this one line, which they could have sworn they thought they removed because they heard it, I guess. Or like, oh man, we got to get rid of that. When they
like the warmth, your princess.
It's when they're declaring the King of the North. Uh-huh. And they're going through like their options, and they're like, well, you know, we should, you know, do this person, this person, this person. And then out of nowhere, this one dude just yells, Renly is not right. They were just really, really tripping off of it. They're like, oh man, I thought we got rid of that.
I remember that. I remember that. Yeah, no, that was definitely an interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Lancel needs a new wig.
No.
Lancel needs a new everything, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, Lancel's—he looks preposterous. He definitely looks like something right out of Monty Python.
I mean, they could—I was gonna say—they should just slap the helmet on him constantly because.
Yeah. Joff is excellent in his scenes in this one with the
singer. Him and Sansa had that all. I mean, this is easily far and away Sansa's best scene.
Yeah, well, just right before that too, because he comes down off the throne after he's just condemned this guy to have his tongue ripped out
with Marion,
and then Sansa looks like total shit, and oh, you know, so, like she's been so crying, she just, you know, she just looks all busted, mm-hmm. and he just kind of strolls up, you know, kind of cock of the walk. He's like, oh, you look quite nice, Sansa.
Yeah, walk with
like what?
Walk with me.
Well, right before that, the best part was after he judged whatever about the singer. He's like, all right, I'm done for today.
Yeah.
And you get that. I mean, that's definitely a sweet shot too of them doing the punishment while Joff is being, you know, having his lines
marming it up.
Yeah.
That was nice. They got that going in the background.
Yeah.
Timed it perfectly right when they walk off.
Yep.
All right. So earlier in the episode when we're getting Kat's reaction to the news. And she does that slow walk through the camp.
And kind of collapses into the forest.
And the people, kind of the soldiers or whatever, they're kind of giving the bow and kind of making way for her and kind of staring at her.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, like, well, what are they thinking? Like, do they even care? Like, who are these people and what is Kat to them? Like, why do they care?
They're all men of the North. I mean, they're all.
And technically that's their.
Yeah, but like, I mean, like, what's the equivalent for us? Like, would that be like if
the first wife?
Like, yeah, like, is that, like, would that Mr. be like Obama if Obama died?
Yeah.
And so they'd be eyeballing Michelle Obama,
right? Which obviously you never would. Like, you'd actually like go up to her and like, you know, like, you know, try to console her maybe a little bit, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think I'd just bow. Right.
And I mean, it makes me like kind of wonder about the dynamic between like kind of the layperson, like a normal person in Westeros, and like kind of what they think about, you know, the Game of Thrones or what have you.
Well, I mean, you certainly can't really compare it to our current situation with our current president. It would be, you know, because we actually kind of know about the Obamas and whatnot, you know. I mean, as far as they know, they have no idea. I mean, like, they might not even be able to pick her out of a lineup, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, these random just fighters in the army.
Yeah. And they're like, all right. So they're like, all right, so this lady's husband died. Like, that sucks. You know, my wife has died. You know, I know what it's like. I'm not going to, like, fucking bow to this person or whatever. Like,
well,
it just
I mean, the whole social structure is different. I mean, she's a noble, you know, and they're just. I'm assuming most of the people that bowed, I don't think I saw any, I don't think I saw like the Great John or anything bow or anything, so.
Definitely not.
I think, you know, she's a noble and they're just basically peons, so it's like a courtesy thing too.
They're just getting the fuck out the way and bowing.
Hmm.
They don't even know. They don't even know Ned's dead. That's just what they always do.
My lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to make water in the forest, please? It's nice seeing you again.
Let me get out of your way and bow.
In any case, Catelyn's collapse in the forest, not too good. But I thought Rob's chopping at the tree was pretty good.
I thought it was a little too long. I felt like I was getting the extended cut of that scene.
Well, I mean, it might have been a little long, but it definitely felt like Rob had lost someone as opposed to Catelyn that just like randomly collapsed and then looked like Catelyn, you know?
Yeah.
So. During the King of the North scene, where they're all yelling "the King of the North, the King of the North," I can't remember if this happens or not in the book. But why exactly does Theon bend a knee?
No, he does. It's really weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
I mean, it does. I mean, I think he says you can. You know, you have my bow. You know, kind of.
Yeah, he gives like this really axe. Lengthy kind of badass speech or whatever, and he bends the knee.
Yeah, he's like, "Are we brothers? Then I'll be your brother till the day I die."
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's intentionally confusing because I think it's
because he's conflicted. Like he's just getting wrapped up in the moment.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's just weird because he's not the lord of the house of anyone's house or anything.
No, not remotely. It's just a random dude.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought that was definitely weird, and I couldn't remember if that happened in the book or not.
No, he definitely doesn't in the book. It's weird. But again, I think it's intentional. Okay, so that now nicely kind of bring me into some of this other stuff. The scene with Peisel and Roz.
Yes.
Joe's favorite scene of the entire season.
Obviously brings up some certain discussion points about, but I think what it really boils down to is, what did you think, how did you think Meister Peisel was going to be when you read the book?
How old did I think he was going to be?
Or how feeble?
Maybe. Well, I mean, I'm totally colored by the series because I didn't read the books until I watched the series.
Yeah. See, I never thought he was. I mean, obviously he's old. Obviously he's not mobile as much so as anyone else. I never saw him as someone who takes two steps and is out of breath, or something like that. And I feel like they allude more to him being such this pawn of the Lannisters, where he's actually kind of an intelligent, I thought it was interesting what he was talking about in the scene with Ross, where he's saying that he's served kings for 67 years and that he knows how to serve kings. Like, he's pretty much telling her, like, I'm putting on a show. Like, I'm literally putting on a show. I say what kings want me to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's clear that he's saying that I'm playing the game, you know? Like, yeah. he survived longer than the three kings he served. But, I mean, the question would then be, like, if he's doing Roz, like, clearly she's got to know that, like, he's a little bit more than just this dude that gets out of breath after, like, saying a long sentence, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, how hilarious would that sex scene have been? Because he's got to keep acting like he's old, right?
You'd assume so, right?
Yeah, I guess so, since he puts on the show after he closes the door for her. Yeah. You know, obviously he made a big show of trying to get up when she was leaving and whatnot, so.
Yeah.
That would have been super awkward.
And the question to me, for me about that entire scene, I mean, clearly we kind of get a little backstory or whatever, but what is the point of the scene of Peisel saying, you know, "What? Look at me! I'm playing the game." Like, in the books, at least, he doesn't have. Do we get very much Peisel at all, besides when Tyrion realizes that he's a Lannister guy?
No, yeah, I think it's pretty much like Jake was saying. Like, in the books, it's kind of alluded to that he's pretty much just a pawn.
Yeah.
For the Lannisters. It kind of separates him, makes him a different, you know, his own character.
So, I mean, do you think we're going to get, like, more Peisel then? Or do you think it's just going to be like, all right, well, clearly he's not just this one, he's not just this old imbecile. But, you know, now that we've proven that, like, we're just going to forget about him and treat him like we were before.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Because, I mean, up to that point in the series, he's always, you know, he's been, he's had those sweet choice lines about the, about Ned being a turncloak and
treason.
And Sansa birthing treasonous seed or whatever.
Yeah. I think this was just like he got a scene, you know, in the series.
This was 15 minutes.
I think pretty much.
Shuffle.
Yeah, and it just kind of proves that, like, all right, look, everyone's playing the game. Like, this guy's got his thing. He's acting like he's really old, but he's actually fine. You know, like, he's got game going. Everyone's got game. And then I don't think they'll like add anything crazy about him, like, playing his own angle. I think it was just kind of to set him apart, you know, give him his thing.
Going off of the king's counselors, if you will, I found that Varys and Littlefinger scene to be pretty good.
So those are the other two kind of characters I wanted to talk about a little bit.
Verbal jousting.
Yeah. Well, all right, first off, for me, the highlight was was was, you know, Littlefinger making some quip about him not being a man, and then Varys saying you could do better than that, I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
But then I think Littlefinger immediately quips back with, did they take the pillar or the stones?
Oh, he said pillar. I thought he said pillow, and I was going to ask you guys, what the hell is he talking about?
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure he said pillar. Did they take the pillar or the stones?
That makes a lot more sense.
And I lost it at that. All right, so, but then, obviously, these are supposed to be the two manipulators, right? Mm-hmm. These are supposed to be kind of the two guys who are playing the Game of Thrones. Like, the two guys who are actually playing the Game of Thrones, you
They're
know?
They're playing it hard.
You know, Cersei might think... Yeah, like, Cersei might think she is, but when it gets down to it, she's not. She's you know, these two guys' queen pawn.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so in the books, it's made certainly clear, even someone in the series, is that Littlefinger is not as good of a player as Varys. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, no, definitely in the books. At least it seems as though Varys is definitely more behind the scenes, more of a he's got more like pawns out there to use.
Yeah, I would say agreed that Varys always seems like he has got fingers in more pies.
Okay, and so thereby it makes Littlefinger seem kind of kiddy, like kind of, you know, like, you know, he's trying to, you know, it's cute, you know, he's like a little kiddy, like, you know, that's great,
remember.
You know, well done, you know. So then I guess, and I think they do a good job of making him seem like that in the series, but I'm not sure if they're trying to write for him like that or if it's just Carchetti being a terrible actor and just not, like, conveying what he's supposed to be doing. Does that make sense?
To me, it almost seems like in the series, they're building up Littlefinger. In the show, they're building up Littlefinger a lot more than they ever do Varys. Like, we always hear about how Varys has little birds around or anything. But Varys doesn't really do anything until he goes to visit Ned in the dungeons, you know?
Part of it maybe is just that Varys is a much more intriguing character, and so that maybe they feel like they have to give Littlefinger some more stuff to do.
But I'm saying in the series, to me, it just seems like they've switched it, where it seems like Littlefinger clearly has a game in hand, and he's, like, kind of kicking everyone's ass, and Varys is included.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's kind of what I was trying to say is that, like, Littlefinger always kind of seems like a Caitlyn person, where he's just always making the wrong decision almost. I mean, you never really know.
Littlefinger?
Yeah, I think so to a certain extent. I mean, obviously you don't know everything that's going on, and obviously he's a lot better at it than some other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I always get the impression that Littlefinger's gonna go down, I guess, at some point.
You're talking about in the books.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely in the books, it definitely seems like that. I don't know.
No, I never got that impression. I always felt like he was, like, in pretty good control of kind of what was going on. Like, not to say that he has this huge master plan, but just that, like, he's thought about things.
Well, I mean,
you know,
as,
thought things through where
I'd
they're going to go,
the
where they possibly go.
As the book goes on, it seems like he's got this master plan, but we don't really see his master plan come to fruition until, like, midway through book three, almost.
It just always seemed to me like Varys was setting him up to so that, like, I don't know, that Varys knows everything. It just always seems to me like Littlefinger's always one step behind Varys.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that in the books, but in the show, I'd say it's almost reversed.
Well, yeah, I mean, to this point, you just haven't seen Varys that much or been privy to what he knows and whatnot. So.
Yeah, but I mean, Littlefinger, Mayor Carchetti, if you will, his acting is definitely.
He had some real wooden things.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't remember exactly what it was in reference to, but, like, he kept he was, like, taking notes about something, and then he would kind of look up and off to the side and say something. Then he did this real wooden turn back, head tilt down. I wish I hadn't jotted
down.
Well,
he was doing that with Ned in that one scene a ton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. But I think maybe – I can't remember. Maybe it was when he had the scene with the Hyoas in episode 8 or 9 or whatever, but I can't remember. It's just real bad.
Yeah, no, he definitely should have stayed in Baltimore, I think.
Yeah, he should have been running the show there.
But, yeah, it's really jarring to see. Because, like, everyone else, it seems like... I mean, Caitlyn doesn't seem like the best actress, but they don't give her a lot of different acting sort of stuff to do. And, like, what she does, she's solid at, you know? But it seems like Littlefinger or Carchetti or Aidan Gillen, whatever you want to call him, he's not even, like, solid at... him being, like, the conniving, snarky guy. Like, he just seems like this, he's got like a wooden post that runs between like his neck all the way down to his ass or something, you know?
And also, I think part of it with him especially is he seems like he's trying to go with an accent of some kind.
And he kind of comes in and out of it too.
That's what I'm saying. And just hasn't nailed it down at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just nothing sounds right coming out of his mouth ever.
No.
Yeah. Hopefully he'll settle into the role a little bit more. But
we'll see.
Last thing about this episode in the Game of Thrones recap before we get into the season 2 trailer that they seem to release one every like 5 days. We can't talk about episode 10 and or the season 1 of Game of Thrones without going to the funeral pyre scene and, of course, the dragons. What do we want to say about this?
Before we get to that, can we get to John's last scene?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Not his last scene with them going north of the wall, mm-hmm. but when Sam runs into the tree and he makes this little girly squeak and it's hilarious. That's all. I just wanted to mention that.
Oh yeah, no. And I wanted to mention that I think that scene where like they're bringing John back or they catch him in the woods.
Yeah.
Was pretty good until they all recited the oath at the same time.
Right. It was definitely
and
a lot more
really corny.
It was definitely a lot more badass in the book. That part was.
I mean,
but there's also a lot more people going after John to bring him back. It wasn't just the three characters. But obviously, they'd only established those three characters so far, so that made sense. But yeah.
I feel if they had just continued to trade off lines, or if each person just had like another line in the oath,
right? Yeah. Not all at the same time.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been nearly as corny. But when they all join in, it was almost groan worthy. So
yeah.
But yeah, okay, Joe, do you have anything before we get to the funeral?
Well, just leading up to that, you know, like when we find out that Drogo, you know, is basically turned into a melon and they kind of, that they go over to the cliff where he's kind of laying in the sun and Jorah kind of mumbles, he seems to like the warmth, princess. And I want to know how the hell they figured that out. Like, how do they know he likes the warmth?
Well, in the book, they have the whole thing where, like, he, like, stirs more when he's outside or whatever, right?
Yeah. And in the book, I don't think he's completely catatonic at all. Like, I mean, you know, I don't think he's mobile at all either. But, I mean, I think he's a little bit more responsive.
Yeah, I think he, like, grunts a bunch and stuff, whereas in the series, he's just, like, lying there.
And actually, the guys on the commentary gave Momoa a lot of credit for his acting performance in episodes 9 and 10, where he's just laying there with his eyes closed, trying to be as still as possible every scene.
Or not even, his eyes aren't closed, they're open. He's got to keep them open.
That's what I meant. And especially a couple of the scenes that they were really laughing about because, you know, Dany's all up in his grill and stuff like that, and her hair is, like, all up in his eyes and stuff like that.
Takes some real poise to pull that off.
Yeah, no, it was definitely – those were some acting chops right there, guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, funeral pyre scene. What do we got?
Miriam Azdur's going down in flames was fantastic. You know, her from being kind of, you know, brash about it, kind of smiling and giggling when half the call goes away, which, you know, when Daenerys frees them, and then, you know, her saying she's never going to scream, and then she screams.
Yeah, but you know what would have made it so much more badass.
What's that?
Is if right as the fire starts to get going. You know, Dany walks into the flames, and then she just goes face to face with Miri Mazdoor and just totally grills the shit out of her while she's like burning. You know,
yeah.
And
that's
so like,
because
like obviously Dany wouldn't be like hurt at all by the flames, but Maz would be like freaking out. That would have been so awesome.
That would have been awesome, but I don't think there's any way that could have happened. Like,
you mean practically? Oh, yeah, they could have done that. They could have pulled it off. They could have, because like they could have had her head popping off like Raiders of the Lost Ark and shit like that. It would have been awesome. And Dany's just totally just like staring her down.
Well, I mean, clearly they wanted it.
Hair's on fire, and she's just staring her down.
Yeah, it would have been awesome.
I think they clearly wanted to do that for dramatic tension to see if Dany was just crazy and grief stricken and/or would actually survive. So I think that was more for dramatic tension, if you will.
Are you saying that my scene would have been more dramatic?
I'm saying your scene might have been more. It might have been more dramatic, but it wouldn't have been as tense.
Maybe.
As, you know, as like, oh man, I don't know if Danny's going to make it or not, because clearly she's making it if she's standing in front of Miri while Miri's head pops off.
Well, we already know it's not a problem, because like, she
can't get
in that water.
We already know the horse's too hot in the lady.
Exactly.
Not for that line, we would have never known.
They've really gotten out of their way to make sure we know that she's going to be all right. I mean, just imagine her head popping off. And Danny just staring her down. That would have been so awesome.
Oh, man. What do we think about the dragon CGI when she pops out in the morning with the dragons?
My initial impression was that it looked terrible. The more times I've seen it since then, I haven't been as disappointed with it, though.
It's not bad. It's not bad. You know what actually is not doing it any favors is Danny's reaction.
Yeah.
She's like, she's just not doing anything.
And she, I think she mentioned that in her commentary, was that the most that she struggled with any scenes were the ones with the dragon, was the last scene with the dragon. Because, you know, she like wasn't sure where they were, like wasn't sure, you know, what the hell she was doing. I think they had like things that she was supposed to like hold when she was filming, and they just weren't cutting the mustard.
Yeah, and she kind of cradles one in front of her crotch. Like, yeah. I'm not sure if they did that to, like, try to avoid the full frontal, but it was just really weird how she was holding it. It's just all really odd.
Yeah, and she doesn't really react to the red and black dragon on her shoulder that much when it screams.
No.
It's really annoying. But, yeah, no,
she's
also
supposed to have her hair burned off. She's not supposed to have those locks anymore.
Yeah, certainly not those eyebrows.
Certainly not those eyebrows.
But, yeah, I mean, she just was showing absolutely no emotion, and, like, that's totally, you know, antithetical of what's going on. Like, here she's
getting
her to her dragons. Yeah, like, she should be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like Drogo, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. In any case, though.
Any other gems for the commentary?
No.
It was pretty stale.
Yeah, they weren't doing it. I mean, they were just tripping so hard off the Renly's not right thing for the last half of the episode.
All right. Well, I think if we've got nothing else, that'll do it for the season one recap. I would definitely say that as the season goes along, they kind of found their strides. That was definitely good. Hopefully season two will continue where it left off, if not get better.
Yes.
Before we get done with this podcast, though, before we end this Game of Thrones segment of the podcast, as I mentioned, HBO has released yet another teaser trailer, if you will, for season two. They seem to be releasing one, at least one every week, if not sometimes two. Most of the trailers, if you've been watching them, have kind of been the same footage and or the same same dialogue line.
So what do we think about kind of Danny stroking Jorah's cheek tenderly here at the beginning?
That's definitely interesting.
I mean, I guess the real question is, do you think that she's falling for him, kind of, or do you think that maybe she's manipulating him somehow?
I don't think she's got that game to manipulate.
Not yet, at least, huh?
It seems like they're kind of playing up that she's falling for him a little.
Mm-hmm.
Trailer too. He is much more handsome in the show than he's supposed to be in the series. In the books.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be busted in the books. Really busted.
Well, speaking of busted people, the next thing I've got to note on this trailer is that about the 21-second mark, we get a look of Bran.
Oh, man.
He looks like a 40-year-old woman.
Bran is looking real awkward and gangly. It was when I saw the shot of Bran, it immediately reminded me of when the actor who plays Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter books, like, grew a foot.
Yeah, he looks like he got Botox or something.
I mean,
yeah, and I have a pause right now. I'm trying to figure out what happened with, like, his hair. I mean, something just looks so far absurdly off.
I'm telling you, he's just like, it's that puberty, son. Shit hits hard.
Yeah, I guess so. And then we got Catelyn talking about Rob inheriting some responsibilities and the like.
And things coming at a cost. We won't spoil anything, but
we spoil the shit out of everything so far. I think we're okay spoiling.
I'm pretty sure.
At least
we
I know
haven't
I have.
Really
just, let's just
anything.
Say. Well, let's just say that it's probably
Jake's spoilers are like. Jake is like, all right, here's a spoiler. Tywin may not be the nicest guy.
Yeah, that's because I'm not really because I'm about to let on more than I want to, but then at the last second I balk. but I will say that it's obviously directed at Rob's love life.
Mm-hmm. The love interest that we've seen him making out with a ton of times in previous trailers.
That's no fray. Let's just put it that way.
Right, right. He's betrothed to a fray.
An ugly one at that.
Most likely.
And then we get Sansa's dress getting ripped off for the 10th time in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have that part in three different scenes in every trailer, you know? Every 10 seconds they just show that.
As many angles as they can. And then we get Meister Cressen from the prologue of the second book.
Yeah, and this is the first time they've shown Meister Cressen. They've shown this kind of bonfire scene,
indeed,
but they haven't shown him and or we haven't heard him speak, so... It's a nice little thing we got there.
And shortly after that, we get a look at kind of the table in Dragonstone that's shaped like Westeros. I'm not sure. I guess it's probably not mentioned in the first series at all, but it's just kind of a cool like throne room. I can't call it like the drum or something like that, right? What they call that room?
Yeah. It definitely has a name like that.
Mm-hmm. Melisandre looking fierce in her red dress.
Looking real red. Yep. And then Joffrey like kind of standing up. Looking all pimp.
Yeah, peering over the ledge. Yeah.
Raining on a wall.
Pretty funny. Yeah.
So what's the next good thing we get?
I'd say the next good thing we have is this Theon scene where he's sitting at a candle. At least it looks like Theon. I'm assuming it's Theon.
Yeah.
He's sitting at a candle and he's burning a note.
A little bit before that, there's a scene with Theon where, it's definitely him at a table with Rob. So he's definitely not going to suddenly show up in the Iron Islands like he kind of does in the book.
Right.
Or at some point, I guess he makes it back to Rob's camp. But yeah, so that's interesting.
Mm.
Well, and I guess that we don't really know exactly. I mean, the novels in the book aren't necessarily told in sequential order.
Right.
And he doesn't have anything to do with anything else that's going on, right?
Right.
Like, his story is totally compartmentalized. So it could kind of be taking place at any point. So, yeah,
he or Caitlin or whatever has the one chapter where Rob sends him off to the Iron Islands. That comes in book two, right?
Is there a chapter where he actually where we actually see him leave? I'm not sure.
I feel like there is. I feel like we get the thing where Rob's like, go to the Iron Islands, or Theon mentions that I should go home and, you know, I'll help you out with the war or whatever.
I'm not sure.
I kind of feel like it doesn't happen.
Anyway. So then we get him in candlelight.
I just watched the Melisandre birthing scene again.
Oh, Bagman.
It's intense. It freaks me out. Look at that. She's into it. And then we get the peeping Littlefinger right afterwards.
He loves to peep. Is that it for this one?
Yeah.
We get some Brienne in the tent.
We get some
new sword play. We get another angle of Sansa getting stripped.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's pretty much.
We see some more of this mysterious green liquid that Tyrion's holding.
Yes. The mouthwash.
Yeah.
We got a random shot of Osha stripping.
And Littlefinger getting mugged or taken or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're getting good, man. We're getting closer. I'm excited.
Yeah, these are very exciting times. I mean, especially doing this made me realize, especially in the first half of the season, how many of the scenes were not in the books. So I think we're going to get a lot of good stuff that's going to be good and new.
Yeah, I mean, especially they've been playing up Littlefinger a lot in many of the trailers. So Littlefinger does not have any POV chapters in the second book or the third book. So it looks like we're going to be getting a lot of Littlefinger's journey, if you will. So
yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be cool to see the filmmaker's take on what he's doing, because we really don't get a lot of deets in the novels.
No.
But I think that's going to do it for the Game of Thrones segment of this podcast. Like I said, we're clearly done with the season one recaps, so we will not be talking about Game of Thrones again until after the premiere on April 1st. So definitely check that podcast out.
Yes, I'm done with the pods until after the first of the month. So I look forward to talking with everyone again, see where we are, talk about the pilot.
All right. The premiere. I believe the pilot is on.
Oh, right. Yes, the premiere, my bad.
All right,
gentlemen.
Oh, Jose.
Later.
All right, now that Jose is gone, I and Jimmy TV will do a quick impression of how we thought season two of Walking Dead ended. We've got the last two episodes to comment on, so...
Are we not bringing Alan up in here?
Apparently, Elaine, our newest member of the TV crew, is indisposed. So it's just you and me, son.
Okay. They're off the farm, Bex.
It's about bloody time.
You gotta be excited about that.
I mean, before we get there, let me just say. They don't think or plan anything.
No, I mean, especially with this. I mean, the second to last episode, they're fortifying the house.
Yeah,
I mean, that's all they're doing in the second to last episode is they're fortifying the house, and then when it comes time to run into the house and use the defenses that you've been built. They instead go frolicking around in their cars shooting this endless wave of zombies.
Yeah, it doesn't – I don't know. Walkers. I don't understand how they've survived for so long, because, like, even when they're, like, running around in their cars, like, driving back and forth, it's – first of all, no one ever misses, which is
ridiculous. Not Lori.
Andrea.
Andrea is half out of this car, like, just at this impossible, like, angle. And, just the fact that she can even maintain, like, keep holding her body up this way for an extended period of time is amazing. Much less be this pinpoint marksman hitting people in the forehead every time she shoots.
I mean, she couldn't even hit, like, the broad side of a barn in, like, the third episode. And now she's a master marksman. Not only that, but, like, I'm pretty sure Carl has only shot a gun, like, twice. And over Rick's shoulder.
Her shoulder, buries that one into undead chain.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. But first, they don't miss. And then, of course, I mean, I guess when you don't miss, you can do ridiculous things like driving around in circles and just taking pot shots at zombies. But, like, if you're going to plan something out, like... You could easily just, like, drive up, park, because they're not going to, like, sprint after you. Then you can take a couple pot shots, and then you can drive away again. Like, the whole driving around in circles and shooting at people was ridiculous.
Yeah, it certainly had – I mean, especially, like you said, I mean, the zombies aren't thinking. They could have easily just made some sort of, like, line, gotten to the barn – to get Carl and Rick, and then as one move the line back and then pieced out. Did they ever say that they if things went to hell that they were going to meet back at that place?
No. See, again, that's
How do you not have that in your plan when things go to hell? Like, if we need to run, this is where we're going to meet. How does that
like
conversation
they never they never showed it in the show. Maybe they did have the conversation, but they definitely never showed it. And they didn't do a good job of, like, Rick being like, no, this is where we're supposed to meet. It was more like, well, I mean,
maybe they'll come here.
Soon they'll come here,
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, they've been on this farm for 14 episodes. You think there would have been at least one episode where they were like, all right, let's plan some shit out just in case something happens.
Yeah, if we ever need to leave the farm, this is our rallying point.
Also, on the comment of plans, when Shane plans to take Rick through the forest and then, you know, essentially kill him.
Yeah.
Clearly that doesn't happen. It happens the other way around. Like, when Rick is like, oh, so you're going to do it here, like, you think they're really far away from the farm. And then at the end, you see that they're, what, like, three quarters of a mile away from the farm?
They definitely didn't go that far, that's for sure.
Exactly. And if, like, Shane's going to be killing Rick, like, you're not going to want to do it in an open field a half a mile away from the farm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone's going to come on his body at some point.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's everyone's plans in this, whether they're there or not, is just absolutely ridiculous. Luckily, we did get a lot of action, which is always nice, considering we got barely any for most of the season.
But it was just so ridiculous with them rolling around in their car shooting at zombies.
I know. It was. I mean, like, the Rick plan made sense, and that was good. I thought that was good. But, yeah, the fact that no one is hunkering down in the house, like, I don't know. It was just too much.
Right.
It was just too much. And then, of course, they killed some more characters, which didn't mean anything to anyone.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. Why would they kill off two of the three random new characters?
Yeah, I mean, clearly Maggie was going to keep on.
Right. How about T-Dog got some lines?
T-Dog randomly showed up.
He even threw in a, oh, hell no.
Yeah. Yeah. If any of the characters you thought would die in this season, you would think that it would be T-Dog.
Yeah.
Because not only does he have a ridiculous name that everyone in the show still calls him.
And it's so awkwardly, too. Whenever they call him T-Dog, it's just so, I don't know, it just never sounds right. It never sounds good.
Exactly. Lori's like, T-Dog, turn the car around. And I just started tripping. I was like, oh, wow. You can't keep calling this guy T-Dog. But, I mean, I don't understand how he made it out of season two. When they killed off Dale and Shane and even the kid, and then some of the ancillary characters, like, if there was one character that should have died,
yeah,
it should have been him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, hopefully, I mean, I hope that he actually has something to do in season three, because it would be ridiculous if he had just the same amount that he had this season.
If he's pretty much just not there for 12 episodes and then has a couple lines in the last one.
Mm-hmm. And drives a blue pickup truck.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, what did you think of the shocking, if you will, reveal of
that they're all infected?
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I like it.
I mean, what do you think that really changes anyone's?
No, I mean, I don't think it changes anything. I'm surprised at how taken aback people were by it.
Yeah, no, everyone definitely.
I mean,
overreacted to that.
It would not have been a big deal to me. I'd have been like, oh well, you know, that's fine. I'm not trying to die anyway, so why does it really matter? You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're going to be able to decide anything when you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, you just come back. It doesn't really matter. But everyone overreacted. And then, of course, the combination of Rick doing a piss-poor job of explaining how the whole Rick-Shane thing went down.
Oh, man, it did not sound good at all when he was going through his little spiel.
I mean, clearly, like, I think they clearly purposely made it sound like he was at fault so that people would get pissed off at him. When he clearly could have been like, yeah. He was like, yeah, Shane took me through the woods or anything. But that was after he was like, yeah, I killed Shane. It had to be done.
Yeah.
He was trying to steal you. I was like, you know what you say?
It's like,
Through the woods and then pulled a gun on you.
Yeah.
And in self-defense, you had to kill him.
Yeah, he did a poor job there.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that Lori's overreaction to that when, like, she's hugging all up on him and then he's like, I killed Shane, and then she immediately freaks the fuck out is just...
Considering two episodes ago, she was imploring him to kill him.
Yeah, exactly. She was basically like, yeah, you should probably kill him because he thinks that I'm his.
Because he wants me, yeah.
So, I mean, they really need to do something with Lori's character because that is just awful. Plus, like, I mean, I don't know. Everyone's, like, all up in Rick's grill for keeping that from everyone, which doesn't make any sense. So now they're creating, like, some more fake tension for no reason.
Right, right. Just so that they could have some fake tension.
Exactly. So, and everyone looks like they're going to split off, but clearly no one does, except for Andrea.
Right.
So, and clearly the zombie Jedi, or whatever that was. Can you shed some light on that?
She is a character in the comic book canon, named Michonne, who they just recently announced the casting of. So that's probably why they didn't show her face at all. But I don't really know much about her, and obviously she certainly seems like a giant badass.
Yeah.
With two blades and two walkers chained to her in tow.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I want to know how she's keeping these walkers, like, because if they just have them chained, like, how are the walkers not advancing on her, you know?
Right. Like, I mean, I think she pretty much has them, what, like, chained to her, right? Like, yeah, so why are they not all up on her grill and stuff?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. That's just crazy. Maybe it's pointing towards something where you can almost control the zombies somehow.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
I guess we'll see what happens then.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And
I mean, that was definitely the most badass moment, I would have to say, of, like, the entire season so far.
Yeah. And something kind of interesting, I guess, is when I was kind of looking through it at reviews for this past episode, I saw something that made mention that the guy who writes the series, who writes the comic books, is actually just now getting around to writing kind of an origins of her character.
Oh.
So readers of the comic don't even really know too much about her. Nice. I mean, obviously they know a lot more than we do, but they don't know how she got to be the way that she is. So, yeah.
I've got a question here.
Yeah.
We know that everyone's infected.
Yeah.
Do we think the infection will transfer to Lori's baby?
I was kind of wondering about that myself.
Because, I mean, clearly, like, some infections can, you know, like HIV or whatever can do that in the real world. So maybe, but it would be interesting if they gave this sort of hope. I mean, I don't know. I guess there's really no way of showing it because, you know, no one has any power or technology or anything anymore.
Right.
It would be interesting. It would be a cool way.
Would have to grow up and then die and then not turn into a zombie.
Exactly. Or maybe, like, die after it gets born.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that would it could be an interesting way of sort of, like, being able to continue the series and actually give them some hope as opposed to, I mean, I'm not saying that they necessarily need it, but
and it's not like they're going to advance the storyline 20 years into the future or anything like that, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that could be a real interesting point.
Yeah, I agree.
I wanted to bring this up. Well, first let me say this, that clearly the shot at the end with the jail in the background, them being so close to the jail.
Yep.
Clearly that's going to end up being a focal point next season. I have a feeling we'll probably be
the new farm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hopefully it'll be a little bit more interesting than the farm. But what are you? What do you think about that? Are you excited where we're going here? Or?
Well, yeah. In the comic book canon, you know, that it was known that there, you know, was a farm location. It's also known that there is a prison location. And they've already announced a lot of other casting for new characters. So obviously we're going to run into at least a group of new people, of some new blood, and obviously it's going to happen at the jail. The fact that it's at a jail gives me a little bit more hope, just because farms on their own are boring and dull, whereas jails should be kind of claustrophobic and exciting and stuff like that. So
yeah, and I mean, especially since there should probably be some more interesting characters as opposed to just like a family that's just trying to hold up. Hopefully.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see, again, I don't really know too much about this, if the Jedi Walker killer is in league with the prison, or if they're maybe a different faction or you know what's going on with that. So honestly, I at this point would rather just follow obviously machete wielding badass and Andrea over quibbling group. Yeah.
Well, I think they definitely realized that everyone was just like, this is awful, always being on the farm or going to the town just to get supplies.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that with the Andrea subplot, that Michonne is not
Right. Well, yeah. Where I have been kind of against you on that, I'm definitely on board with you on that now, is them having a separate storyline a little bit.
Yeah, at least to like spice things up, because if every, I mean, what, 90 to 95% of the scenes of season 2 were on that farm.
Yeah.
And they were just going nowhere, so. I also found it weird that Rick still is holding on to this belief that there's like a place that's safe.
Yeah.
Especially after what just happened at the farm.
A safe haven? Yeah, I thought that was a little curious too. Also, do you have anything else you want to say about that before I say what I'm going to say?
No, I just thought it was weird that he's still really adamant about there being
There being a place. Mm-hmm. Do you think Shane snapped that guy's neck?
Oh yeah.
Because
I thought.
No, see, I don't think they did. I'm gonna have to go back and look at it. I could have sworn when I was watching that they showed him walk off screen, still had Shane on screen, and then that guy yell and with the sound effect of a neck break. Maybe not, though. Maybe I was completely out of it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's at least supposed to be implied that Shane broke his neck.
Right. I just thought it would be interesting if, you know, Shane was going to go with him to his, you know, little place or whatever, and then this guy just being an idiot, you know, finally being free, just kind of like trips over a log and breaks his own neck.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure Shane definitely broke it, but I mean, I guess you never know whatever happens off screen, but
yeah.
It seemed like Shane had been planning it all along, especially when he broke his nose or whatever, so.
Yeah.
How about T-Dog wanting to go to the beach? How do you feel about that?
Man, dude, T-Dog was just really freaking out for a second. T-Dog just lost his shit.
Why does he want to go to the beach?
I don't know, but yeah, that was weird.
I mean, it's not like he can swim. What? No, I mean, it just doesn't seem like you're not going to have the high ground at the beach. You're not going to be able to run on sand. You know, like, there's nowhere to retreat into. Like, there's the ocean, and then there's walkers coming at you. Like, are you really going to try to go into the ocean and, like, swim down the beach? Like, T-Dog clearly not thinking that out. So, even though he was given some lines in this episode, they were not smart lines.
I thought it was really weird also, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I wanted to bring this up. Now that season 2 is over, clearly the comic book series is about just them surviving. There's nothing else in it, really. It's not like there's an end game. It's not like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Kirkman, the creator, Robert Kirkman, has gone on the record saying, you know, there's not going to find a cure. There's not going to be some happy ending.
Yeah.
But like, you know, this is a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we think, assuming that it continues to get renewed, where do we think that the show is going to end? Or what would you like to see as the end being? And sort of the general thrust of the rest of the season. Of the rest of the series. Because I don't think I don't think they've really had a clear plan of where they want the series to go.
Right.
You know, so where would you like the series to go? Where do you think they should focus most of the energy on? And where do you think the ending should be? What happens at the end, if you will?
I personally enjoy the show when they're running away from zombies, not when they're trying to. So I guess I would like to see them. I would like to see them continually trying to pursue a safe haven place, but never find it. I guess.
What do you want to see? Any? Do you think the focus on the characters should shift at all? Like, do you think they're not a main character, but maybe like the story kind of becoming more about a certain character?
I think the story should really be focused on Carl and the younger generation of people. Unfortunately, Carl doesn't seem to be a very good actor, so I think that's
nope.
The least they can focus on him, the better.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with that. I feel as though they could easily, I think they should make it a clear focus for the rest of the series as being, I don't know if you've read The Road, the novel by Cormac McCarthy, but The Road is basically about this post-apocalyptic time where basically a father and like a 5-year-old boy are just trying to survive themselves. And I think that the series would do a really good thing if they focused on Rick not caring about the group as much and just trying to make sure that Carl is ready to survive in like this setting. So they, cause they could still have it be where like at, by the end of the series, like Carl is ready to go off and then Rick dies or something. And it's still all, it's all encompassing. Whereas like he's still just trying to survive, but you know, you also get like this kind of thing where it's like Carl is now prepared to survive in the world, you know, like he might right. be the most prepared out of anyone ever so far. You know what I'm saying? So I think it would be wise for them to really focus. Maybe not give Carl more lines or anything. I guess they would have to, at least a little bit. But I think they should focus on trying to build that up, because I think that's really the only way the series can like find kind of an ending. Whereas Rick kind of stays the same the main character. But then he ends up dying, and then Carl.
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think it should have this happy, you know, ending where they magically arrive somewhere where the walkers can't get her, where they find a solution to the walkers, you know, to turning them back into dead bodies, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be more of a focus on them finding ways to make it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the fact by Carl kind of growing up
right,
and
right.
being able to survive in this world, I think that would just be the natural solution. Although, with the whole Lori Baby situation, it could be interesting to get another sort of thing, whereas, you know, new babies aren't automatically born with it. So
right. Right.
That could also be an interesting kind of twist in there, whereas they get some more hope. Kind of, but they still have to fight off the walkers and stuff too.
Yeah.
So, I've got one last question before we go.
Let's do it.
I know in a previous podcast I mentioned how they're not infected by like all this blood spewing in them,
right?
And all that kind of stuff. And clearly now we get that they are all infected. Do you think that the infection has come because of the walkers? Or do you think it just somehow everyone got infected with this before any of the walkers showed up?
I mean, that's certainly interesting. I mean, like, what? So in essence, how did the outbreak start?
Exactly.
And that's obviously something that they could explore storyline-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say that it was that the outbreak was before the walkers, the chicken before the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So
you think basically everyone was infected and then obviously
not. I mean, I think it obviously had to start in some location where the outbreak started initially and then spread.
I'm basically just asking, like, do you think it was basically just like a disease that was like airborne transmitted, or do you think that you had to have some sort of contact with the walkers? Or like with the walker blood or something like that.
I would think that it just because in the finality of them knowing quote unquote that they are all infected, that it would have to have just been some airborne thing, not necessarily something where they got some of the walker's DNA on them or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, I don't think it would be. Rick Grimes would come out and say that everybody's infected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. Clearly, I was not a big fan of season 2 of The Walking Dead. Unfortunately, last night's probably last half with the zombie Jedi and the jail somehow.
Is enough to bring you back for more.
Exactly.
I actually read a pretty interesting article that was saying, again, it was also talking about how not really good TV the second season was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it absolutely crushed ratings-wise. And it was just interesting that you know, they were just wondering if by the show not being as good, that meant that somehow they managed to get more ratings, and that if they improved the show, would that mean that the ratings would get worse and stuff like that. But yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, it depends on what improve means, I suppose. Like, when you're watching the show, like, I knew that the ratings were huge for AMC for The Walking Dead, but when you're watching your show, like, I'd say arguably AMC's most talked about show is Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
In critic circles, you know.
Right.
And it's interesting that they have all these episode or all these ads during Walking Dead.
Yeah, did you like the? I really enjoyed those Mad Men ads where they were playing up the Walking Dead angle of it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, those were cool. I think they were definitely clever. So like, yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's gonna get people to watch the show, especially since Mad Men is, I think, what, 5 seasons in now. But
yeah,
it was just interesting to see that they're trying to sell Walking Dead people on Mad Men. By trying to create similarities that really aren't there. Although the ads are pretty funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed the ads.
I also have to say, there's one thing that they definitely need to improve from season 2, and that's everyone explaining exactly how they feel and what they're thinking.
So you don't want the episodes to be written by women anymore?
I mean, they need to change something up because it's ridiculous how, like, I mean, the Rick and Shane scenes where Rick is just like, yeah, look, she's mine now. She's mine. You got to stay back. And then, like, the one where he just, like, in the last episode where he's like, look, this isn't going to be a democracy anymore. Everyone's going to, you know, I thought it was proper, all this nonsense. This is how I'm feeling sort of stuff, like. They need to make it at least a little more subtle because it's definitely really glaring on how many times like they meet together and like, yeah, I don't know about this. What do you think we should do about this? Maybe we should do this. And then like that's the scene, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A little too much explanation for me. But in any case, season 2 of The Walking Dead is over. I believe season 3 comes back this October, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm assuming I will watch it.
Yeah, back in the fall.
But, yeah, I guess that's going to do it for the TV pod, at least. We'll be on a 2-week hiatus, I believe, and then we'll come back at you with Game of Thrones Season 2, Episode 1 premiere.
And Mad Men, too, right?
Yeah, Mad Men. We'll get some Mad Men up on there, and we'll check in on some other favorites, like Awake and stuff, and see how those are doing.
Oh, do you want to? Can we talk about Awake real quick?
I haven't watched the third episode.
Oh, you haven't watched it yet?
No. I did read the synopsis that the tennis coach returns, though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, that's all I want to talk about.
Yeah. So I'm pretty stoked for that.
And South Park's back.
South Park is back.
And Community. Community's back also.
Yeah. So we'll definitely talk some of those on the next TV podcast.
Cool.
And as always, you guys can come by the website in-the-bag2gs.com for all sports, television, and movie-related nonsense.
All entertainment. I mean, we got it all, baby.
It's true. It's true. We even got a little video game on there. We've been blowing out the sports a little recently, talking about a lot of NFL free agency, so come by for that.
Yep.
And, yeah, we'll come at you guys in about 2 weeks.
Cool.